Friday morning on KSJE. We wanted to share with you some recordings from our archives of our friend and colleague Judy Pelier today. Dr. Pelier died suddenly earlier this week. She had retired from San Juan College in the spring of 2016 from teaching sociology and political science, but she could always be depended upon to provide some context to the political landscape, which is exactly what she did with me 11 months ago, on the day before Election Day, November 7th, 2016. In the studio is retired San Juan College professor, Dr. Judy Pelier. Dr. Pelier, welcome. Thank you for coming in this morning.
Well, thanks for inviting me, Scott.
Good to have you here to talk about what has been, I think we can both agree, a very unique election season in this country for the past 18 months or so.
Oh, I think to call it unique is putting it mildly.
Okay. Yes. We really haven't seen anything like it.
We really haven't, and that's, I think I don't mean that in a good way. We've seen a breakdown of civility to a degree that, you know, I'm 62, I don't remember it in my lifetime.
I wanted to have you on to kind of make observations about the campaign season, what's been going on, how we got here, how maybe other countries are outside looking in, wondering what is going on in the United States, and that kind of conversation.
In the interests of full disclosure, I'm a lifelong Democrat.
Right.
But I am also, for 22 years now, a political scientist. And my interest, obviously, as a human being, I care about who wins elections. But as a political scientist, my job is to look at the process.
Right. And so when we do that, and you mentioned that lack of civility and kind of just that ugliness that really kind of came to the surface, I think, on both sides to a certain degree. And I can remember growing up that there was always talk about whether or not you liked the president or liked the candidates. There was still a respect for the office. And it seems like that may have gone out the window at some point in the last year or so.
I think it has gone out the window. I think the window's been open for a number of years now. To continue with that analogy, I think that we have seen more and more polarization, and we've seen less and less civility, less and less ability for people to listen to people they don't agree with. I have a friend who posted a thing on Facebook the other night about how he's living in an echo chamber. It had suddenly occurred to him that he really doesn't communicate with people he doesn't agree with anymore. And I think most of us have segmented ourselves to the point where most of what we see and hear in a day is goes along with what we already believe.
Right.
And that's been part of the problem, I think, is that people are not willing to listen to opinions they don't agree with. And when presented with facts they don't agree with, they refuse to believe them.
I think that's very true. And I know my head tends to explode on occasion when I look at my Facebook feed and I see just radical articles from one spectrum and then reactionary articles from the other side, and they just come up. And I guess I have a pretty balanced Facebook friend list because I get them from both sides and they both drive me crazy.
Yeah, I think they both drive me crazy too. I've said for years that I don't like knee-jerk liberalism any more than I like knee-jerk conservatism. I think there is room on both sides of the fence for valid opinions and valid truth. But I don't think that, I don't know, it's kind of depressing, but I think that most people don't actually care about the truth that much anymore. They care reinforcement for what they already believe.
And I think that is a valid point. And I think if you look at the media landscape these days, we've kind of built that type of scenario in that we now have media outlets that really do kind of play towards one political point of view over the other, and we gravitate towards that which we agree with, and that's what we see, right?
That is what we do. The other thing that I think is a problem is that our media outlets tend to, if they're trying for any sort of balance at all, and we got to put that word balance in great big quotation marks,
right?
But if they're trying for any sort of balance at all, they give you an extreme liberal and an extreme conservative. And the two of them shout at each other, and whoever shouts the loudest and the longest wins. And that is now how we conduct our public discourse. Nobody's listening. No one is respecting each other. No one is trying to learn from anyone else. I either agree with you or I don't. And if I don't agree with you, there's no reason to listen.
And wasn't there a time, Dr. Pelier, when members of Congress, members of state legislators, governors, presidents would work for the betterment of society or the betterment of the general population and not kind of paint themselves into a political corner, depending on what the party said they had to support?
Well, there was. And I think a number of factors have fed into that. And I think one of them is the effect of money in politics. Members of the House and the Senate spend so much time fundraising and back in their districts and doing that work. It used to be that, people could have an argument on the floor of the Senate on Thursday afternoon and go out and play golf together on Saturday morning.
Right.
Now on Saturday morning, everybody's back in their district or they're off at some fundraising event.
Or on the cable news channels, complaining about their opponents, right?
Yeah, yeah. And so there is no time for those relationships to build. And, you know, politics at its best is about human relationships. And I think we've lost that element, or those relationships have become, I don't want to use the word corrupted because that word is too loaded in American politics today, but they've become tainted,
okay.
Those relationships.
Right.
Or they've become weaker than they really need to be.
And it seems like a lot of the populace has kind of gotten frustrated with kind of the do-nothing status quo, or just the Washington insider viewpoint, I guess, if you will. Do you get some of that?
Well, yeah, but we all complain about it, and we keep reelecting people.
Right, because it's not our guy who's the problem or gal. It's the other state's guy or gal that's the problem.
Most people, and this has been true for many years in polls, excuse me, that most people don't like Congress, but they like their personal representative a lot.
Right.
And part of that is that your congressional representative does a lot of what's called casework. So if you're having a problem, when my mother was 81 years old, she applied for a passport to come visit me in Mexico. She was born at home in the early 1900s, and there were no records. Well, there were records, but her name was misspelled on them, so
trying to present that
the
document.
The government didn't want to give her a passport because the documents were funky.
Right.
My sister called her congressman, and 2 weeks later, a passport arrived in the mail. That's what's called casework. If you're having trouble with your veterans benefits or
Social Security, those things.
Any of that stuff, you go to your congressman's office or to their aide's office. In fact, Congressman Lujan has an aide in Farmington.
Right.
His name is Pete Valencia. He's been here for years. Excuse me. And Pete is the person who helps you fix that stuff.
Kind of knows how to get through the bureaucracy.
Yeah,
and get
exactly.
It
he knows
done.
Who to call and get it done.
Right.
So people love their congressman because he's the one that fixes the problems, or she's the one who fixes the problems. But they don't like Congress as an institution.
Right.
But, you know, I always go back to something. I think it was George Bernard Shaw said, the nice thing about democracy is that people get pretty much what they deserve. Yeah.
I'm just thinking where we are, Dr. Pelier.
I know.
Really? We deserve this?
Well, we keep electing people.
I mean, there has been a process. There was a primary process, and these are the candidates that we
chose.
That the country chose. You're right.
I mean, we've gone through a long historical process, and this is where we are.
Right.
Can I name a specific point, a critical juncture where we could have turned another direction? I suspect there were a lot of them. But at this point, it doesn't do so much good, I think, to look back and say, oh, this is where we should have done something differently. The real question is, what are we going to do now? We are where we are.
Right. And so certainly we both encourage everyone to go out and vote tomorrow. Because it is their constitutional right to get out there and vote. And I think sitting at home doesn't really help anyone.
Sitting at home doesn't really help anyone. You know, over half of us don't vote in most elections. And there's a lot of literature out there in political science about why that is. And many people feel like their vote doesn't matter. I've had a lot of students over the years say, you know, the Electoral College messes it up, so my vote doesn't count. Most of them don't really understand how the Electoral College works when they say that.
Right.
That's
that probably launches you into another lesson, I bet.
I was employed for 22 years, yeah.
Right.
But, and some of them will say, okay, there's nobody out there I want to vote for. And I understand that response, that feeling like the system doesn't work for me. Never right. did, never will. I understand how people come to that conclusion. But not voting is a very maladaptive response to that, because just because you vote doesn't mean the system will start working for you, but not voting certainly is not going to fix that problem.
We are remembering our friend and colleague Judy Pollier this morning on KSJE. Dr. Pollier also helped to provide safe zone training and safe zones for members of the LGBTQ community here at San Juan College, in addition to being one of the founding board members of Identity Inc., the first LGBTQ community center in Farmington. In 2015, she helped KSJE produce a program featuring coming out stories from members of the LGBTQ community, and Dr. Pollier shared her own story with us.
In honor of National Coming Out Day, we went to Identity Inc. and listened to several stories, each unique in circumstance and timing, but with many familiar themes, though some were contradictory. Discovery, rejection, acceptance, discord, and harmony. Please join us in witnessing these very personal reflections of coming out in rural America.
Well, I was also raised in the Midwest and educated in Catholic schools. It was not easy. I identify as bi, and that's been a whole other sort of series of comings out, sort of on you know, no matter who I'm with, there's a coming out to be had there. And I knew that about myself when I was in my early teen years. I also knew, without anybody ever talking to me about it, that it wasn't acceptable in the society that I lived in. By the time I was in college, I had some good friends who were gay, one of whom I still refer to as my brother. He passed away almost 10 years ago now. But the first time my parents ever met him, I brought him home one Saturday afternoon. We were out running around and I'd forgotten something, so we went by the house to get it, and I was not out to my family at the time. And my father was really upset about my brother, who I brought to the house. I don't remember everything my father said, but I remembered the phrase, outside the pale of society. Like, you know, this is a person who's so far out there, you shouldn't be having anything to do with them, and neither should anyone else. Anyway, yeah, so I knew this was unacceptable. I had a girlfriend in those days. We were not living together, but I had a girlfriend. I also had a couple of friends, two guys who I was very close to in the community. One of the men in the community, a young guy, a teenager like myself, got mad at me about something, and I honestly do not even remember what I did that pissed him off. But he outed me to my parents in retaliation. By the time they, you know, sort of summoned me to talk about this, I already knew that they knew. So I decided honesty was the best policy. I don't know what on earth led me to believe that. And so I walked in and I said, okay, I know you got a phone call. I know you don't think of it as good news. I don't know exactly what he said to you, but I do want to tell you that I am attracted to women as well as men, that I have known this about myself for many years now. And my parents lost it. That was when they threw me out and I couldn't come back for a period of time. Actually, after about 3 months, my father called and told me I could come back home, but I really didn't want to at that point. And I was, for thankfully a short period of time, one of those gay homeless teenagers you hear about
the two guys who were friends of mine had an apartment together, and we were all poor as church mice, but they took me in just to keep me off the streets so I would be able to sleep indoors and eat on a regular basis. That rift between us never quite got healed. I mean, I spoke to my parents, I spent time with them. We just never talked about anything that I thought was important ever again. And oddly enough, the guy, my brother, who my father had called outside the pale of society, was one of the two people who was with my mother when she died. The other one was my sister. My mother never quite got over him either. I mean, even though he helped her quite a bit during her final years, I don't think she ever said it to him, but she was always, you know, willing to tell me how much she disapproved of him and his life, even as he was, you know, bringing her food in the nursing home and trying to take care of her. You know, I had a teacher in graduate school who was a lesbian and a feminist, and she wrote an essay one time about coming out, except she called it becoming out, because she said it's not something you do one day and then it's over. You know, becoming out is a decision you make every time you walk into a room full of people. And I'm a teacher, and I think about that a lot when the semester starts, and who's sitting in that room and how afraid are they? And most of the work I do is really to try to make that process easier for the people who come behind me and are going through it now. I don't think I live in a closet anywhere anymore, but I know a lot of people who do, and I know a lot of people who have to. And I never encourage anyone to come out, because I think people are the best judges of when that's safe for them. But I always try to think about the environments we create that make it easier or harder for people to be themselves.
Retired San Juan College professor Dr. Judy Pollier, in her own words, appearing on KSJE in 2015. Dr. Pollier passed away earlier this week, and our thoughts are with her many friends and family during this time.